This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In. I'm your host, Layla Mutin, here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for downloading these podcasts. Thank you for listening. I do appreciate any of your questions, topics of interest. This is all fodder for me to talk about, too, so this is great. Please email me to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I've got an email from John. John writes, I listen to all the Intelligent Medicine shows, and I especially like your Layla Weighs In broadcast. Thank you, John. Thanks for listening. I'm taking daily 2 magnesium taurate pills containing a total of 2,500 milligrams and 5 magnesium citrate pills containing 1,000 milligrams. My creatinine level is between 1.32 and 1.58. My magnesium level is 1.9, which is fine. But I'm wondering if I'm taking too much magnesium. I take magnesium taurate for heart, and I take magnesium citrate for bowel regularity. This is a great question, John. So, first of all, I know that magnesium taurate, maybe it's the particular brand I'm thinking of, which is Cardiovascular Research, which is what Dr. Hoffman sells. Each capsule contains 125 milligrams of magnesium taurate. You state that you're taking 2 magnesium taurate pills containing a total of 2,500 milligrams. I'm wondering if this is a typo. I'm wondering if each of your magnesium taurate pills is 125 equaling 250 instead of 2,500. Or, of course, you could be taking a different brand, different dose, certainly. But it's rare that I would see a brand that has within one pill or a capsule the equivalent of 1,250 milligrams of magnesium taurate. That's pretty high. So, John, my first question to you is this a typo? And you're taking 5 magnesium citrate pills containing a total of 1,000 milligrams of magnesium citrate. So, each of those magnesium citrate pills you're taking is 200 milligram, which sounds about right to me. Now, the question about your creatinine. Creatinine is a marker of kidney function. We like to see a number of, 0.6 or something, and yours is between 1.32 and 1.58. My first question to you would be, are you currently taking... Well, first of all, this would be a consult, if anything. So, John, if you were to see me, I would investigate if you're on any prescription medication, if there are other medications you take over the counter. Are you on beta blockers or calcium channel blockers for blood pressure or any other thing like that? That can cause creatinine levels to change in this way. So, let me clarify. We like to see creatinine under 1. And you're between 1.32 and 1.58. Your serum magnesium level looks fine, but again, a serum magnesium level doesn't really help us too much. It's helpful to ask your doctor for an ionized magnesium, but I'll tell you, it's rare that doctors do that. And when Dr. Hoffman had an in-house lab, that's something he really did. He looked for ionized magnesium as well as calcium levels, because this told us on a molecular level if magnesium is being utilized. So, John, it's possible, certainly, if you're indeed taking the equivalent of 2,500 milligrams of magnesium taurate, that is absolutely too much. Magnesium taurate is more bioavailable than magnesium citrate. It's primarily for the heart, blood pressure, all of that. Magnesium citrate, because it's less bioavailable, tends to hang in the colon, draw water to it, and float on through. Would be a little safer. Here's the thing. If anyone has kidney disease or compromised kidney function or anything else, and typically people with blood pressure issues, their kidneys may be adversely affected. And if they are, if renal function, kidney function is adversely affected, we have to be careful with the amount of magnesium that we give them. So, John, I hope you're not taking 2,500 milligrams of magnesium taurate. The amount of magnesium citrate seems okay, but again, should this be a consult or become a consult, one of the things I would look at is everything that you're taking, all the rest of your labs, your complete medical history, and all of that. I love your question because it does illustrate how much deeper we need to go as practitioners. I can't just willy-nilly say to you, based on your creatinine and not knowing anything else about you, in terms of previous medical history, what your other labs are revealing, all of that stuff, I cannot willy-nilly tell you how much magnesium to take. And really, this would not be the forum. If you had a simpler question of which is the best type of magnesium to take for my heart or for my blood pressure or anything else like that, that's an appropriate question. But I do appreciate your question, John. So thank you for that. Moving on, some things, just bits of scientific news to report. This comes from a journal, I have never heard this before, called Noise Health. Therapeutic role of vitamin B12 in patients of chronic tinnitus or tinnitus. You know, that chronic ringing in the ears. That ringing can range from a little bit of a tingling, like a little Tinkerbell or fairy. I don't know why it makes me think of Tinkerbell, but a little ring, ring, ring. And other people have the equivalent of something much louder, like a vacuum cleaner, which is tough to deal with, tough to manage. So, therapeutic role of vitamin B12 in patients of chronic tinnitus, a pilot study. This was done in India, in Integral University in Lucknow, Uttar Pradesh, India. The objective: true tinnitus is a phantom auditory perception arising from a source or trigger in the cochlea. The cochlea is the inner ear, the brainstem, or at higher centers, and has no detectable acoustic generator. The most accepted is the famous neurophysiologic model of Jastreboff, which stresses that tinnitus is a subcortical perception and results from the processing of weak neural activity in the periphery. There could be nerve damage. There could be nerve damage in the inner ear, the cochlea, all of that. That can be caused by loud sounds, and it could be caused by an infection of the inner ear. The aim of the study is to determine the role of vitamin B12 in treatment of chronic tinnitus. B12, as you know, may be singularly the most important nutrient in neurological health. And this absolutely applies to something like nerve damage, which may be occurring in the inner ear as a source of tinnitus. So here are the methods. In this randomized double-blind pilot study, a total of 40 patients were enrolled, of which 20 in group A received intramuscular therapy of 1 ml of B12. That was the equivalent of 2,500 micrograms weekly for a period of 6 weeks. And group B, 20 patients received placebo saline intramuscular. You have to have a control group that doesn't actually get the therapy to determine if the actual intervention is helpful or not. The patients were subjected to vitamin B12 assay and audiometry pre and post therapy. They had, you know, audiological tests that you would normally get. If you've ever visited an ear, nose, and throat doctor, they send you to an audiologist to see how your hearing is. So they received these hearing tests pre and post therapy. So this is what they found. Of the total patients of tinnitus, 17 were vitamin B12 deficient. That is, 42.5% showed deficiency when the normal levels were considered to be 250 pg per ml. Wow. So they were below that. I know Dr. Hoffman and I consider 250 already to be deficient, even though you see commonly on lab values that the normal range could be anywhere between 250 and 600. We like to see it up and above 600. So 17 were B12 deficient, and that means that's 42.5% showed deficiency when the normal levels were considered to be 250. So they were below 250. PG per ml. Okay. And patients with B12 deficiency showed significant improvement in mean tinnitus severity index score after B12 therapy. So this is interesting. So those who are deficient got the most benefit. Really, that's what this says. So the conclusion is, this pilot study highlights the significant prevalence of B12 deficiency in the North Indian population. An improvement in tinnitus severity scores in cobalamin deficient patients receiving the intramuscular B12 shot weekly for 6 weeks further provides a link between cobalamin deficiency, which is B12 deficiency, and tinnitus, thereby suggestive of a therapeutic role of B12 in people who are B12 deficient and who have tinnitus. It's interesting. The prevalence of B12 deficiency in North Indian population, you know, Indian population in India is primarily vegetarian. And in vegetarian and vegan populations is where we find the most B12 deficiency. So this is interesting. And again, even amongst my vegan and vegetarian patients, those who want to continue being vegan, vegetarian for ethical reasons, for other reasons, and who are not willing to change their diets, I make sure to supplement them with B12, among other things. So this is very, very, very telling. Wow. Now, another study, very interesting study. Marginal vitamin A deficiency facilitates Alzheimer's pathogenesis. This was done in China in cooperation with Townsend Family Laboratories, Department of Psychiatry, University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. And here's the background and objective of this study. This is marginal vitamin A deficiency. not an overt deficiency, marginal. Here's background and the objective of this study. Deposition of amyloid beta protein to form neuritic plaques in the brain is a unique pathological hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. We know that. The beta amyloid protein, the buildup of the beta amyloid protein in the brain is a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. But here's the thing. That beta amyloid protein is part of the metabolism of the brain. That's how it helps to get rid of its junk. The question to ask is, why is there a buildup? Why is it not able to properly metabolize this junk and get rid of it? So, this amyloid beta protein derived from precursor protein is turned over by glia in the central nervous system, and vitamin A deficiency has been shown to affect cognitive functions. And marginal vitamin A deficiency is a serious and widespread public health problem among pregnant women and children in developing countries. If you remember, some months ago I talked about a wonderful paper written. It's on the Weston A. Price website about reevaluating the role of vitamin A in pregnancy. And it may be a good time to revisit that article at Weston A. Price. Just in the search box, write vitamin A. So, however, then the point of the study is the role of marginal vitamin A deficiency in the pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease remains elusive. That's a reason to do a study, right? So our study showed that marginal vitamin A deficiency is approximately twofold more prevalent than complete deficiency in the elderly, and increased cognitive decline is positively correlated with lower vitamin A levels. Wow. We found that marginal deficiency of vitamin A, mostly prenatal deficiency, promotes beta site cleaving enzyme mediated amyloid plaque production and neuritic plaque formation, and significantly exacerbates memory deficits in Alzheimer's disease model mice. Supplementing a therapeutic dose of vitamin A rescued this marginal A deficiency-induced memory deficit. Of course, we have to, again, it's a rodent study, it's a mouse study, and we have to be careful how we extrapolate. But I still found this study very interesting because it wasn't the overt deficiency of vitamin A, but a marginal deficiency. Think about how much of the world's population is walking around with an overt deficiency, let alone the marginal. So it's not enough just to meet, for instance, an RDA for a nutrient. We have to do better, and that's why it's important to take your antioxidants. So, in conclusion, taken together, the researchers say our study demonstrates that marginal vitamin A deficiency facilitates Alzheimer's disease pathogenesis, and vitamin A supplementation improves cognitive deficits. These results suggest that vitamin A supplementation might be a potential approach for Alzheimer's disease prevention and treatment. Very, very interesting study here. And I'm going to talk a little more about Alzheimer's. There's another interesting study. This was in Science Daily from Indiana University. Caffeine boosts enzyme that could protect against dementia. New analysis reveals 24 compounds that can help reduce impact of harmful proteins in the brain. Researchers have identified 24 compounds, including caffeine, with the potential to boost an enzyme in the brain shown to protect against dementia. Indiana University scientists university scientists have identified 24 compounds that increase the brain's production of the enzyme NMNAT2, which helps to prevent the formation of these tangles associated with neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's. We're talking about the tau proteins. This work could help advance efforts to develop drugs that increase levels of this enzyme in the brain, creating a chemical blockade against the debilitating effects of neurodegenerative disorders, says the researcher who led the study. Colleagues found that NMNAT2 plays two roles in the brain, a protective function to guard neurons from stress and a chaperone function to combat misfolded products called tau, which accumulate in the brain as plaques due to aging. The study was the first to reveal the chaperone production of the enzyme. Misfolded proteins have been linked to neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, which appears to be rising, Huntington's diseases, as well as amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. We are seeing more ALS. Alzheimer's disease, the most common form of these disorders, affects over 5.4 million Americans, with numbers expected to rise as the population ages. So, to identify substances with the potential to affect the production of this NMNAT2 enzyme in the brain, the scientific team screened over 1,280 compounds, including existing drugs, using a method developed in their lab, and a total of 24 compounds were identified as having potential to increase the production of this enzyme in the brain. One of the substances shown to increase production of the enzyme was caffeine. It was also shown to improve memory function in mice genetically modified to produce high levels of misfolded tau proteins. So drink your coffee, everybody. This is really, really interesting. Other compounds shown in the study to increase the production of this important enzyme in the brain, retinoic acid. The effect of retinoic acid could be significant since the compound derives from vitamin A. And here is yet another link to vitamin A, besides having a cup of coffee. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.